Hello, Rob here, and welcome to the latest episode of Press X, the Geek Show's exclusive video game podcast in which we take two topics and chat about them. They may be relevant to what's happening in games, they may not be. Either way, there'll always be something interesting to talk about. In the past archive clearing episodes, I've talked at the front end and the back end of the show. I'm only going to talk at the front end this time, get it all out of the way at the beginning, so you can just sit back or drive back, or whatever you're doing while you're listening to this, or gym back, or whatever I'm trying to get at here, and just listen to the show. But if you do like it, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from. Keep up to date with all the new episodes, as well as checking out some of the other stuff available on the Geek Show Podcast Network. But important for this, as you'll heard so many times in so many different podcasts, wherever you get us, whatever podcast provider you get us on, please do give us a rating and a review, because it helps new people find us. And if new people find us, it helps the podcast grow. It helps the podcast become its best version, the ultimate of what it could be. And that's very important, you know. Every podcast deserves that chance to be the best version of itself. So without me rambling much more, let's introduce this week's episode. In the first half of the show, we talk about art in games, and I realise there's a lot of baggage there where people make the debate, the constant debate of whether games are art. I'm not weighing in on that. Enough people have talked about that as we go on in the half of the episode. What we're talking about is games that use art within the mechanics, and in the second half, we talk about tycoon and simulation games where you run something or you manage something, and that's where the episode titles come from. The scariest games in the world, because as we'll go on to explain, there really, really are. But for another episode of Press X, I'll hand over to past recordings of both myself and Rob, and thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Hello, I'm Rob.
And I'm Rob.
And this is Press X Video Game Chit Chat. And this week, we're doing... I'm going to swerve you a little bit here. I mean, the title of this video does give it away, but when the art and video game conversation comes up so many times, it's the conversation of, are video games art? Let's ponder pretentiously for 30 minutes.
Well, see, this is where I run into a problem. Video games... See, art by its nature is a very singular pastime. It's a very singular, it's a very singular activity, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard to say that, and that's not what we're talking about today. Instead, we're going to swerve it and talk about games that use art as a gameplay mechanic.
Well, yeah, there's those. What I was going to say was art is a very singular activity, and so... You can have an artist or a group of artists collaborating with each other, but video games are something that it requires a group of technicians and programmers and people like that. Do you see what I mean?
There's a lot of debate about what is art, what is an artist, and frankly, I have no interest in ever talking about that because it's already been talked about to death by people way more boring than us.
Yeah, make the point that the reason why we're not talking about that, one of the reasons why, anyway, is because you could have all of the pretty graphics that you want, but it's still generic third-person action-adventure.
You've really got a problem with that sort of game, haven't you?
It's part of the open-world fatigue that we were talking about a few shows ago. I'm kind of tired of them. And you could give it as... The thing is, you could give it all the nice backgrounds and all the artsy-fartsy, you know, stylistic things that you want, but the game is still the same as generic game A over here or generic first-person shooter over here. Do you see what I mean?
I can't... Yeah. Future Rob is going to be very clever and put Akami in here, and this means we're not having a go at Akami. Akami is great. Akami is the exception.
Yeah. So, anyhow. See, Akami had an interesting angle to it, but that's not what got us started on this. Concrete Genie is started.
I mean, Concrete Genie... I think it was announced that last year's E3 2018, I can't remember where it was announced at some point anyway, it's PlayStation 4 Indie, that's right, it's coming through, I guess, it's the primary platform there.
Yeah.
And in it, you play a young lad who's having a hard time of things. He's bullied. Life ain't great for him. And he discovers he has this ability to basically make graffiti monsters come to life and affect the world and have powers in it. So I know many people, many fuddy-duddies maybe, they'll say that graffiti isn't art, but it is when it's done right.
Yeah.
So that's what sort of opened up this conversation of games that use art as a mechanic. Because when you sit down and you look at it and you consider it, I mean, Akami is a game where you use art as a mechanic. You are using a very traditional sort. I mean, you don't use it, but it's what's happening on screen is basically a interpretation of somebody using that sort of traditional Japanese calligraphy.
Yeah.
And you put like a circle through something, you put a swoosh through something, you do something to something. It's art.
Yeah. I mean, by the same token, they kind of followed up Okami. Well, not followed up Okami in the literal sense, but they were inspired by the way Okami played when they made when they released Epic Mickey 1 and 2, which is basically Mickey Mouse with a paintbrush. But I will say one thing, because you mentioned Okami, and I just want to say, just from the trailer of Concrete Genie, there was one game that immediately sprung to mind, more so than Okami, when I saw the trailer. Jet Set Radio.
Would you include... well, yeah, I mean, I've described it and totally there. That is what it is, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
It's one of the things we're going to do with Press X going forward is this thing called the Dead Franchise series. So we'll talk about that more in that, I think.
Yeah, but I think Jet Set Radio would make an interesting pairing with Concrete Genie. And make an interesting pairing with Okami as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's art. Is it style? It's street style. It's street art. And it's amazing that I never considered that because I loved the first one. Absolutely adored it.
What, Jet Set Radio?
Yeah, if it was Jet Set Future, was the sequel, wasn't it?
No, Jet Set Radio Future was basically just a revamped version of Jet Set Radio for the Xbox.
Yeah, right, yeah. But it's graffiti. You go around graffitiing something. In that, it's much more... So it's not art graffiti, it's tagging, if we're going to be honest. It's just writing your name or putting your tag on obscure places.
Yeah, but, I mean, when you get right down to it, art is a very...
Oh, please don't make it this episode where we define what art is.
No, I'm not. We're not defining art. What I'm saying is art is subjective, you know? I considered Jet Set Radio an artistic game in a complete sense. Just
it is, but it's artistic game. It's just I'm being very anal about it.
Yeah, I know. But then the weird thing is, the Dreamcast had some interesting games that kind of fell into that category where they were artistic. They played with various perceptions of what art actually is. So you had Rez, for example.
Rez was just LSD nightmare, though, wasn't it?
Well, no, because it was and it wasn't. Because Rez was one of those bizarre games where you saw it and you weren't sure what to make of it. But the inspiration for Rez came from stuff like, came from stuff like Kandinsky's paintings and stuff like that. So there was a lot of artistic inspiration for the game. Yes, right, that was pretentious. But then you had stuff like Space Channel 5, which was as...
Oh, wow, you are stretching that if you include... It's Pretty Alien Dancing Game.
Yeah, before Pretty Alien Dancing Game was a thing.
Is it a thing?
I don't know. I don't know.
Lola or something. It's been such a long time since I've even thought about Space Channel 5. It was like a pink-haired alien called Lola who just danced on a space station.
See, the weird thing is, those games were produced by Tetsuya Mizuguchi, right? Who went on to do stuff like Child of Eden later on. But he was also, I think, the producer for Lumines and games like that. And so you have this kind of sub-branch of video gaming that is very esoteric, I suppose you'd say. It doesn't look at games in the way that... everyone else does. I mean, that game company kind of falls into that category as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. I know they're called Black Game Company, but I don't really think of them as games. They're more like, this is going to sound like the most pretentious thing that I've ever said in my life, but I'm going to commit to it and go for it. But ambient experiences. But it's not about sort of the gameplay loop. It's about experiencing the world. There's no real conflict in it. It's just experiencing the world. So I don't think I could really call them art.
Yeah, well, I mean,
artistic.
They were artistic, but... and that's what I mean when it's difficult for us to act. I mean, and we're not even going to make the attempt at defining what art is, as we've already said. It's very subjective, but you can see the artistic flourishes in games. And by that, I don't mean games that have like really, really high-end graphics like your Call of Duties or your Uncharted 4s or all of those, you know, top-end games, all those AAA games with loads of budget for developing really quality high-end graphics. Okay. I'm talking about games...
Really current like, touchstones there, Rob, really current.
You understand what I mean, okay? I'm talking about games like Journey, for example, which is very stylistic, very simple. Flower and Floor were more experiences. Journey was a lot more like a game, I think.
Yeah. I mean, Floor, I don't know what... I mean, I played Floor, you just go from level to level, eating bits and becoming more and more of a fish.
Yeah, but I mean...
Sort of fish, sort of amoeba thing.
Yeah, and then you had games that spun off on that, like Koi, which I think you played, didn't you?
Yeah, it was like a Chinese game. It got wailed on in reviews, but I liked it. It was that sort of just pleasant... chewing gum for the brain, and I know that as a phrase is really looked down upon, but sometimes you just don't want to play a game which has conflict. Sometimes you just want nice.
Yeah, and weirdly enough, we also saw the rise of the other type of artistic game called the walking simulator.
Yeah, I don't think that really includes in here though, does it? I mean, that's an episode entirely of its own, the walking simulator. Yeah,
I just wanted to mention them because games like Dear Esther and Everybody's Gone to the Rapture and Gone Home and stuff like that, which are dyed-in-the-wall walking simulators, they have really good graphics, but not much in the way of gameplay. They're more experiences, as we've said.
Yeah, looping it around to sort of gameplay methods. I don't know whether you want to call stickers art, but I'm going to call stickers art because don't stifle me, damn it.
No, stickers are art in the same way that graffiti is art.
Well, yeah. It's a game which is almost immediately being forgotten about, but I really, really enjoyed it. It was actually one of the PlayStation 3 indie games that I... love the most. It's called Stick It to the Man.
I knew you were going to say that.
It took me ages to remember this. I remembered the song that played over the credits. I remembered what they did after it, like Zombie Vikings. What's that game? What is it? And it came to me eventually. But in it, you play a guy who's basically attacked by a alien brain monster thing, which gives you the power to have like a giant hand that people can't see, but you can, coming out your head.
Yeah.
And how you affect people is in you put stickers on them to change their state of mind or like item from the world, you put on another item and it changes what it does. It's very sort of puzzly, platformy, psycho-Nazi, clicky, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, Stick to the Man was one of those unusual ones where it relied on stickers. It's kind of similar to, you know, you remember Zelda Majora's Mask?
And before that, I mean, the more obvious jumping off point, we can look back around the Majora's Mask, but from stickers, I think the only real jumping off point of that is Little Big Planet.
Yes. Well, yeah. I mean, Little Big Planet was as... here's a question, right? Is it fair to call them artistic, or is it more fair to call them creative?
I'd say it's possibly the ultimate sandbox game.
Yeah. Do you see what I mean?
Because you are given... Basically, when you do, like, I mean, I know it's kind of passed out of popular culture now, but at the time, like, when the first Little Big Planet came out, it was, like, one of the hottest games around.
Yeah, and
absolutely amazing.
They didn't just do one game, they did three games, and it was on literally every format. You had different variations of that game. You had toys and, little, you know, how-to books and... The internet was just filled with levels from Little Big Planet, from people just creating their own levels.
Yeah, this was way before Mario Maker as well.
Yeah, long before Mario Maker. And I mean, we're talking about level design, which is a very niche thing to actually...
It's not just level design. It's not just a matter of here is a level, negotiate. It's actually putting in the aesthetics of it.
That's what I mean by level design. It's such a niche thing. Even in video game development, level design is really, really niche. It's a very, very specialized skill set. Not everybody can design a level. Do you see what I mean? And yet, because of one game, you had tens of thousands of people across the planet designing their own levels and uploading them.
Yeah, they were actually better than the ones that the developers had made. Some of them were outstanding.
Yeah, and that lasted for three games. I think I think the bubble didn't burst.
I'd say two. Number three didn't really have the same sort of
impact,
power as the other two.
It didn't, but at least you could still use levels from that were developed using the first two games. I think two was the high point, though.
Yeah, it was. I mean, what's Dreams? That's their next game, isn't it? What is Dreams?
When I go to sleep and close my eyes and see weird things.
Oh, here we go. It's the absolute apex of that idea, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's pure expressing yourself using art within a video game.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a level. Apparently, you can make short films in it, which is incredible. Because the reason why I wanted to talk about this is because, yeah, it can be cute. Yeah, you can put stickers on things. Yeah, you can draw graffiti at one end of the spectrum. But at the other end of the spectrum, it's kind of invented its own genre.
Yeah.
And inventing genres is a very, very hard thing to do. I mean, after a medium like video games, movies, whatever's been around for a certain amount of time, the order is kind of established, isn't it?
Yeah.
These creator games, or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, it takes a lot to actually create a new genre in gaming, even a new subgenre in gaming. There aren't many games that you can name of recent times that have managed to do something like that.
Oh, I forgot to mention Scribblenauts in this, but yeah, it's incredible. I mean, this is a great ending point. Just creator games have created a new genre.
Yeah, creator games have created a new genre. I mean, I think one of the things that... one of the games that I did want to mention, because, you did mention Scribblenauts, there was a game that played with art in a way that I'd never seen before. And I don't think you had either.
Go on.
The Unfinished Swan.
Yeah, that was a weird one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because it was kind of like you were designing the level, but... It was already designed, it's just you had paint, you threw paint, the world revealed itself.
Yeah, it's weird because there was an RPG, I don't know if you remember this, because music is also an art form, yeah?
Of course it is, yeah.
And I know we haven't really talked about rhythm action games, but we kind of touched on them when we talked about Rez and Child of Eden, right? But one of the games that I did want to mention was Eternal Sonata.
I do remember that, yeah.
Which... on the surface, looks like your typical JRPG, but once you start playing it, it really isn't.
It was about Chopin, wasn't it?
Basically, you are running through the dreams of Chopin, who is dying of tuberculosis.
Cheery, not to end on there, Rob.
But the thing is, it's a fictional world that's dreamed by Chopin during his last hours, and the setting is unusual. The actual battle system centers on music. Rather than anything else. So you're fighting with music. How weird is that?
It was in one of those early PlayStation 3 RPGs, which was just forgotten about, totally.
Yeah, and it's a shame because it was such an unusual idea. And I'd love to see more games where, like The Unfinished Swan and Eternal Sonata, where they use the actual artistic mechanic, the actual art mechanic, as something that's intrinsic in playing the game.
Yeah, I mean, there's all those games that you get where it's sort of playing to the beat, like Crypt of the Necro Dancer, and that is all the one that I can't remember the name of, which is basically using the same engine recently.
Elite Beat Agents, and there's all the others, the rhythm action games.
But that's where it stops becoming art as a mechanic and starts becoming stops being art as a mechanic and starts becoming rhythm action.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll be coming to that in a future episode, but I think that's it for this week. If you have anything to add to the conversation, please do comments below, click like and subscribe, or smash the hell out of it, because that's what you're supposed to say on YouTube. Just devastate the thing until your mouse is put dust on the table. That's what you're supposed to do with YouTube, right? So do all that, and thanks for watching.
For us geeks, the cinema is sacred. Whether it's the latest blockbuster or the arrival of the new indie darling, we wouldn't trade it in for a thing. This is Cinema Eclectica. Not only do we celebrate the new, we also champion the old, forgotten and overlooked, whether that means Czech New Wave, slashers, New Hollywood, silent films, J-horror, film noir, surrealism, Shaw Brothers, spaghetti western, social realism, 80s fantasy, or pure honest-to-God trash. Even a certain little misguided attempt at a FIFA movie or an Italian director's whacked attempt at Dracula. It's all cinema, it's all Eclectica, and we love it all equally. Subscribe to Cinema Eclectica wherever you get your podcasts from, including Acast, Audioboom, and Spotify, or head over to thegeekshow.co.uk to get the full archive, where there's movies from all walks of life.
Hi there, I'm Robert Rankin, and you're listening to the Geek Show. Oh yes.
Perplexed by the pompous, ponderous piffle purveyed by normal art critics? Well, you've come to the right place, because we're not normal. We take a not-so-serious look at the serious worlds of art and literature. Join Sarah, Andrew, Rob and Graham for a piffle-free journey through the cultural landscape of the 21st century. Literary loitering. Because you can't make a cultural omelette without smashing a few eggheads.
Hello, I'm Rob.
And I'm Rob.
And welcome to another episode of Press X here at the Geek Show. Right, don't know how to sort of segue or lead into this. There's no game coming out right now, or not many. Or maybe there is, there's that one from Sega, but just get past that. It's simulation and management games where you take like a facility and you just run it for a bit.
Yeah, when we say simulation and management games, we're not talking about things like Surgeon Simulator or Flight Simulator or Euro Truck Simulator or stuff like that.
Well, talking like about Surgeon Simulator was like satire, wasn't it? And
yeah, I'm not. The thing is,
other ones are just kind of like
they're actual simulation games. Yeah, they're actual simulation games. Or what I'm saying is, we're not talking about those games. What we're talking about is stuff like Theme Hospital,
yeah,
or Sim City, Cities Skylines, or stuff like that.
Yeah, where you like take a place or a thing, and you just develop it.
Yeah. Planet Coaster, Roller Coaster Tycoon, because the Tycoon games are big facility. It's a big facilities management franchise, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, how did that even happen?
I think
it's these aren't games. Let's be honest; these are so anti games. There's no end game. There's no you've saved the day. You've finished the story. Well done. You're a hero. You don't finish the season.
Do you know,
they effectively just go forever.
Yeah, do you know the weird thing? I think it came about because of the popularity of games like Theme Hospital. Because you had
Bullfrog. Bullfrog, that's possibly in my top five games of all time. I adored that thing.
Because you had Theme Hospital, you had Theme Park World, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you had, what was the other one? There was another theme one, wasn't there?
So you said Theme Park and Theme Hospital. I can't remember. Comment below if you remember. If you've got a better memory and the Google page in front of you, comment below.
Yeah, but I mean, you had this kind of dearth of tycoon games coming out after that, because I think on the back of Theme Park World, because Theme Park sold really well, and on the back of that, you had Roller Coaster Tycoon came out, and
yeah, I mean, I like these games, but I don't understand why.
Yeah, but this is the thing: once Roller Coaster Tycoon came out, you had this massive influx of tycoon games. You had Zoo Tycoon. And Fish Tycoon, Mall Tycoon.
Hang on. Is that a genuine thing, Fish Tycoon?
Fish Tycoon is a genuine thing, yeah.
So you're not just like plucking some random word out of the air and putting Tycoon on the end of it. That is a thing.
You had School Tycoon, Ski Resort Tycoon.
How can
Railroad?
You be a school tycoon? You can't be a tycoon about schools. What do you do? Just aggressively take over schools and turn them into some sort of farm? That's terrible.
I haven't finished. There was Railroad Tycoon, Dino Park Tycoon, Airline Tycoon, Cinema Tycoon, Plant Tycoon.
You know when you say a word so much it doesn't mean anything anymore?
Coffee Tycoon.
I don't know what tycoon means anymore.
It's
the nonsense sound.
And Pizza Tycoon. Although Pizza Tycoon came out before Theme Hospital did, so I don't think that counts.
Are they all genuine games?
These are all genuine games. Whether they were made by the same developer is a different matter entirely. Because I think with the word tycoon, I don't think they were as zealously guarding or zealously protective of the word tycoon as, say, a certain company is about the word saga.
Or a certain company who tried to copyright the word face.
Yeah.
No hints for who that one is.
Yeah. Well, you know. Somebody with a sweet tooth game wanted to copyright the word saga.
Yeah. But again, I go back to that point. I don't know why these are so popular.
Oh, and Transport Tycoon. Transport Tycoon was another one.
Can you answer that question, genuinely?
Yes.
Why are these things so popular?
I can answer it in the case of me and why I like these games.
But I think that'd be kind of universal. I mean, at least you understand it. I don't. It's kind of like black magic to me.
Okay. You played Civilization, didn't you?
Yeah, I hate Civilization, but I love Civilization because I say, oh, I'll put this on for half an hour, and then I look at the clock and it's 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, 7 hours later. Cause
where did that day go?
it just upped and left, mate. It didn't stick around, and it didn't stop the milk or anything like that. Look, games like this are games, you know, you talk about chewing gum for the brain.
Not in a bad way, chewing gum in the brain of, you just had a horrible day at work and you just want something, there's not a conflict, it's just comfort.
That's what these games are. See, what you've got to look at with these games is that these games are, they give you a certain degree of rewarding emotions for minimum effort. What you're doing is just placing things in a certain way. The game.
Oh, you are not going to include that bloody thing on Facebook, Farmville or whatever, in this, are you?
Yes, I am.
Oh, no, you suck, Rob. Oh.
I have to, because Farm. Look, it's the same reason why games like Harvest Moon and Animal Crossing and Rune Factory and other farming type games like that, and even Farming Simulator. It's exactly the same reason why all those simulation type games. I mean, there's a guy who I know who has a complete.
Hang on, just before you get there, does that mean Minecraft's in this group?
Minecraft isn't in this group. There's a reason why Minecraft isn't in this group, but I'm not going to go into that because that's a totally different discussion, right?
Okay, I'm just asking. No stupid questions.
Let me put it this way. There's a guy who I know who has, he loves his flight simulator games, right? And he has a complete kit in one of his rooms in his house, right?
Yeah.
And that kit is basically running high-end PC with like multiple screens, and it's all kitted out, so it's as if it's the cockpit of an actual dyed-in-the-wool commercial airline. And all he does when he finishes work, because he's got a pretty stressful job, and he goes home, right, and he gets changed into a pilot's uniform, sits down at his computer, and flies to and fro across the Atlantic for the evening. For several hours during the evening, that's all he does. That's his hobby. And you know what? He's perfectly fine, right as rain the next day, ready to go back to work. And that's the beauty of these sorts of games. They give you a lot of reward in terms of your emotional well-being, I suppose. And they carry very low risk. So they don't have multiplayer for a lot of them, do they?
No, it's just you and the game.
Yeah, it's just you and the game. And so you can lose yourself in the game. You can immerse yourself in the game in a way you can't do with other games. And if you're playing Call of Duty or God of War or whatever game, you know.
Well, stuff like that, there's a lot of, what's the phrase I'm trying to look at? Testosterone?
Yeah, but with these games, see, these games, the Tycoon games and the facilities management games, there's a certain amount of pride you take when you basically achieve a certain goal and you have it running the way that you want it to run. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, it's really weird, like, say, City Skylines being really happy about making the energy infrastructure cover the whole city.
Yeah.
But that's not a game thing. City planning is sort of boring.
Yeah, but how many people love City Skylines and absolutely loved SimCity?
Yeah.
And this is the key thing. There's a reason why those games are popular, and I think that's one of the reasons why, is because people have...
I think it's not one of the reasons why, it's ultimately the only reason why.
Yeah, people have stressful lives, and they want to lose themselves in something. It's a pure form of escapism that doesn't require them to interact with other people, because when you're stressed out, the last thing you want to do is deal with somebody else's whose piddly-ass problems are, you know, much more inferior to yours.
Are you suggesting that Boris Johnson plays City Skyline?
No, I'm suggesting he doesn't.
Yeah, he needs to play something like that.
I think Boris Johnson should sit down with a good, with a cup of tea and a good PC that runs Roller Coaster Tycoon World or something like that, or Planet Coaster, or City Skylines, or something where he can just lose himself in the game and just click the mouse button for like the entire night, because he will. He'll lose himself in the game. He'll
By the way, I didn't pick that name because I'm trying to be political. I picked that name because it's somebody with a really stressful job.
Yeah, but then again, maybe Boris Johnson, because, well, according to the Scottish government, I mean, the government is breaking the law, so maybe Boris Johnson would be better off playing prison architect.
Yeah, that's another weird one, isn't it?
See what I mean? But it's really popular. I mean, yeah. It's a game where you design prisons.
Kind of the beauty of this stuff, right? Let's be honest. The beauty of this stuff is when you look at games, there's lots of people who say, oh, that's not games. And they're really, really angry and confrontational about what they play and some sort of sense of superiority. You have all of these stories about how kids play Fortnite and they pick on other kids for not having like the tricked out characters on the avatars, not paying loads of money on the avatars. You have all of these horrible stories going around where gaming has so much dirty baggage, and you get these where you think, right, I'm going to do some gardening for a few hours, look after some animals.
Do you know what some of the more bizarre ones that you had, right?
No, I was referring to Animal Crossing there. I'm just going to look after my thing for a few hours, and it's like zen, isn't it, compared to normal gaming?
Yeah, but that's one of the reasons why I was bringing up some of the more bizarre ones. I mean, Sim Farm is pretty straightforward, right? Sim Farm is pretty straightforward, but do you remember Sim Ant?
No.
Okay,
Sim Ant. Is that an ant colony?
Yes, Sim Ant was basically where you simulated an ant colony. It was published by EA.
And when they were trying and when they weren't this.
Yeah, when they weren't what they are now. But here's the thing, Sim Ant appeared when the whole Sim whatever thing was really entering its first boom. And this was back
in the early
90s.
Around 2005, there was just every Sim game imaginable.
Well, that's the second boom. The first boom was the very early 90s, between like 1991 and 1994.
Okay.
That was the first boom, because that was when you had like Space Colony and Sim Farm, and you had Sim City and Sim Ant and loads of other games like that.
Yeah, there is one that I'm looking forward to that's coming out pretty soon. I can't remember what it was called. It was at the PC Gamer Show at E3. What is it? Theme Hospital in Space.
Oh, that one, yeah. That one looks really good. Do you know one of the ones that recently came out, which I really wanted to have a try of, and I probably will, and I'll get back to everyone and let you know what I think of it at some point, was Jurassic World Evolution.
Yeah, that's one where you looked after the Jurassic Park land, wasn't it, basically?
Yeah. But you had others. You've got so many others. I mean, this is an area of gaming that is often overlooked, but has such diversity in terms of what you actually can do with the game. I mean, hell, Fish Tycoon, it's a casual game, and you basically... it was one of the top-selling downloadable games of 2004, 2005, and 2006.
That speaks for itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you basically take on the role of a fish store owner who must breed and care for hundreds of different kinds of exotic fish.
I mean, there's that one that you like that's kind of crossing over as well, isn't it? Moonlighter.
Yeah,
Moonlighter. There's crossover appeal in that.
Moonlighter has a certain crossover appeal, but I think Shopkeep is probably the one that's closer to that rather than Moonlighter. But that's the thing. You have simulation games, these facility simulation games. The movies was an interesting one. Came out in 2005. And that one, I think you were you a director or a producer at a movie studio? It's a business simulation game. And so you played the role of...
I really love this sort of end of gaming because it's very easy to be blinded by AAA, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very
easy. Whether you love it or you're constantly going about how much you hate it. There's a lot of energy spent on AAA.
Yeah, there is.
And this is kind of about as far... Well, it's the literal antithesis of that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, you have so many different types of tycoon or facilities management games. It's actually quite funny, because when you talk to your average gamer these days, they don't really understand what it is about these games that really makes them a special niche of gaming.
It's true.
You know, because the games that they've played are a specific type of game. And so You know, I just wish more people would give these sorts of games a chance. And you have games like this now on mobile devices and on social media, on Facebook and stuff like that. You have plenty of games like these now.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, I'm scared of these games.
You're scared of losing yourself in them.
Yeah, because I've always wanted to play Animal Crossing, but I know I shouldn't be allowed to play Animal Crossing.
Animal Crossing's pretty tame. You'll be fine with Animal Crossing. The one that
No, Rob. Anything which just allows me to just look after stuff and just...
That's why I said you'll be fine with Animal Crossing. The one that you should be really scared of, right? There's certain games that you should be very, very wary of. Theme hospital.
Just rewind a bit. That's a really weird statement, isn't it? I mean, usually people say, oh, I'm terrified of Silent Hill. I'm terrified of these survival horror games. They're so scary.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. It's one thing to have those scares in games because the game itself is scary, but they're not the truly scary games. The truly scary games are the ones where you sit down to play it and they're at like 10 o'clock in the morning and then you look up and it's dark. You haven't turned any of the lights on and the house is pitch black. The only light is from the monitor in front of you because you've been playing the game for the last 16 hours. And it has
no bad stuff. They have no microtransactions. There's no multiplayer.
Exactly. You can be completely disconnected from the internet and still lose 16 hours, right?
Yeah.
You probably won't even hear your phone ringing. Someone might have been... I mean, if your house was burning down around you, you probably wouldn't know because those types of games...
So it's basically those types of games, that meme where the dog sat in the house that's on fire and he says, everything's fine.
Yes, literally. And those types of games, like Theme Hospital, Railroad Tycoon... Do not underestimate the power of Railroad Tycoon because it is one of those games.
Oh, it's the life here. Yeah, I mean, these are the scariest games for me. Yeah. I mean, that's a good not to end on. These are just scary, scary games because they just eat time.
Yeah, they eat your time and eat your life. And that's a testament to how addictive these games are. And people talk about video game addiction. You don't know what true video game addiction is until you've met someone who's addicted to these sorts of games.
Yeah. And on that note, I think, yeah, it's it for this week. If you have anything to add, as ever, do comment below, join the conversation. But until next time, thanks for watching.